remember years ago, we had a community member who was really struggling financially. And one night we offered a class and it was an $18 recommended contribution to come into the class. And she wrote a note. She said, "I'm doing this class instead of buying dinner tonight." And I said to her, "Please keep the money. I'm happy for you to come to the class for free." And she was really upset by my reaction. And she said, "You've taught us that our dignity comes from being able to contribute. And now you're trying to take that away from me."
That's Rabbi Sharon Brouse. She's the founder and senior rabbi of the Jewish congregation ICAR in Los Angeles, California. She's speaking at a forum organized by Maison, a Jewish response to hunger. You are listening to Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. I'm Umbreen Khan, and this week we're talking about hunger, the harvest, and the American mythologies and beliefs we hold that inform how we see the problem of hunger and the solution. Let's get back to Rabbi Brouse.
There's a dignity in being able to give. And so even if you don't have enough for yourself, but you're able to give a little bit, that somehow that affirms your own dignity.
She is responding to Rabbi Joel Pitkowski. He leads Congregation Beth Shalom in Teaneck, New Jersey, and is on the board of Maison. It's the group that organized this Facebook Live event a week before Thanksgiving. It's one of many events bringing attention to the crisis of hunger. Now, as the rabbis reflect on ancient scriptures at the beginning of the program, they get to this question. Why does their tradition view serving the needs of the vulnerable as an obligation?
So this notion of communal responsibility, it's really for everyone. And it's a responsibility as opposed to a sense of, if I want to, I'll give, but if I don't, it's okay. In Judaism, it's not okay. You have to give. Even when you're taking from another person, you have to give part of what you received to help someone else. You always have to pass it along.
Yeah. And again, I think there are two reasons for that. One is because we're trying to create a kind of social contract where there's an expectation that if you are in this, you are responsible for it, and you will both be protected by the social infrastructure, and you must contribute to it. And the other side is because I think it's very clear from our rabbis that there's a dignity in being able to give.
Maison, a Jewish response to hunger, like the National Network of Gleaning Organizations and Feeding America, works to address food insecurity. But their focus is not in gathering, reclaiming, or distributing food. Rather, their objective is to nurture and grow support for the government's role in addressing hunger and educating the public.
Charity is not the answer to food insecurity. We think there are actually almost double that 40 million people who are struggling with food insecurity, 80 million people.
That's Abby Liebman. She's the president and CEO of Maison. Her focus is working to build support with lawmakers to challenge myths about the roles and responsibilities for addressing hunger in America.
There's only one institution that represents all of us that has the ability to reach that many people, and that's the federal government.
Liebman believes the charitable sector should be seen as a partner to complement government food assistance in times of emergency, not taking the lead in providing food.
I think that there's a notion of charity that's vital here because not everybody can get on SNAP. And so you need that to sort of pick up those who fall through that safety net.
Liebman sees the inverse happening.
The charitable system is supporting the federal government, not the other way around.
One of the myths Maison is trying to tackle is the public perception that local food banks can meet the need. Because that leads individuals to think that volunteer donations are the answer, that they can solve the problem. And that myth, she sees, being perpetuated by narratives that focus on individual action instead of holding government to account.
I am dismayed by some of what I see in the media as the idea that if you either grow enough zucchini or make enough peanut butter sandwiches, you can end hunger in America, because we see all these giant lines at this food bank and they just need more sandwiches. It's not the answer.
The problem, Liebman insists, demands public leadership. And she's not alone.
I always tell people that hunger is a political condition. That's not a partisan reference, but it's a political condition because it will take political will to solve it. And up to this point, we haven't demonstrated that political will.
That's Congressman Jim McGovern. He participated in the Facebook Live event. He is a Democrat representing New Jersey, and he was elected to Congress in early 1996. He has a powerful position in the House. He is the chair of the House Rules Committee and sits on the Agriculture Committee. How did we get here to a place where government is not seen as being responsible for ensuring a fully funded nutrition safety net? And why is food security no longer a bipartisan issue? McGovern explains to Abby Liebman it wasn't always like that.
You mentioned George McGovern. In the 1970s, I was a paid intern for him. No relation, great last name. And I watched how he and Bob Dole, McGovern being a liberal, Bob Dole being a conservative, how they worked together to strengthen our nutritional safety net in this country. And we were on the way to really tackling the issue of hunger.
What drove their cooperation and partnership was fueled in part by public education. One thing that helped was when the conversation changed. And that was after a groundbreaking documentary on hunger aired on May 21st, 1968.
CBS presents this program in color.
Hunger is hard to recognize in America. We know it in other places, like Asia and Africa. But these children, all of them, are Americans. And all of them are hungry.
George McGovern, he used to say that, you know, what got him into this issue of hunger was a 1968 CBS documentary called Hunger in America, which put on, you know, mainstream TV, the face of hunger. And for a lot of people, including a lot of U.S. senators at the time, they didn't realize it was that bad or horrified by that. And that moral outrage compelled them to take action.
But then things changed. There was a conservative backlash to welfare programs.
Ronald Reagan got elected president, and then all of a sudden, people who were struggling in poverty became a punching bag. And for some reason, it became unfashionable to worry about the poor, to worry about those who are struggling to put food on the table. And rather than trying to find ways to help them, we started blaming them. You must be poor because you want to be. You don't want to work. All these false narratives began to emerge that, you know, unfortunately undercut a lot of the work that was done in a bipartisan way.
When Josh Levin, author of Queen, appeared on PBS NewsHour, he explains the story of Linda Taylor and how she became part of a narrative to demonize welfare programs and its recipients.
Reagan was looking for kind of outrageous stories about welfare, and this idea that there were welfare cheats out there was something that created outrage.
In Chicago, they found a woman who holds the record. She used 80 names, 30 addresses, 15 telephone numbers to collect food stamps, Social Security, veterans benefits for four non-existent deceased veterans' husbands, as well as welfare. Her tax-free cash income alone has been running $150,000 a year.
And he didn't say the phrase welfare queen in his speeches, but there was such baggage attached to welfare at that point that I think the electorate really understood what he was saying and really knew what he was talking about. Welfare has been an effective talking point for a whole generation of politicians.
I have a plan to end welfare as we know it, to break the cycle of welfare dependency.
When Bill Clinton said he wanted to end welfare as we know it during his 1992 campaign, that was enormously popular with people on both sides of the aisle, I think is partly responsible for his victory in 1992. And then when welfare reform passed in 1996, welfare went from being an entitlement to being temporary assistance. Mm-hmm. And if you're below the requisite poverty level, you still don't necessarily get benefits today.
But advocates are quick to point out it was not just Reagan. Our national views about hunger reveal more than partisan divides. There are different beliefs about why someone needs help. To Maison's director of community engagement, Nama Haviv, this disconnect is clear when you look at American support for foreign aid food programs.
Somehow, when it comes to other countries, we can see poverty as a societal issue that needs to be addressed through our governmental policy towards that country and that country's governmental policy towards its people. And it is so hard to see the population here who is struggling as a societal problem, right? America is built on individualistic ingenuity. And we have this kind of twist on the prosperity gospel, where if you are successful, then you earned it. Somebody has blessed you and you earned it and you deserve it because you are blessed. And if you are not successful, you must have done something wrong. It's not that society or the structures within society were working against you. It's that you must have made some choices. And I can pity you and help you in the moment, but it is your responsibility to pull back up, not the government's responsibility. And that's odd for us to be able to see people in a distant country and that suffering as a societal issue that needs to be approached with policy. And here we individualize the problem. We say, this was your fault, and I will help you right now, but you need to learn to fish. You need to learn to fish.
The perception of who is deserving of support influences the political negotiations around the annual authorization of the budget for the Supplemental Nutrition and Assistance Program, better known as SNAP. Congressman McGovern explains.
I'm on the Agriculture Committee, and you know, we oversee the SNAP program. And usually every time around the reauthorization of the Farm Bill, we have a discussion on SNAP. And people will, on the committee, will say things like, well, you know, this is an overly generous benefit, and, you know, all people need to do is work. And I always will ask those people pointed questions. Like, for example, do you know how many people who are eligible to work actually do work who are on SNAP? The answer to that is the overwhelming majority. Secondly, you know what the average SNAP benefit is? It's about $1.40 per person per meal. I can't even buy a Dunkin' Donuts coffee for that. The values that we're talking about here run across all kinds of faiths and religions, right? Mm-hmm. And I was raised as a Catholic in a family that when they said, you know, let's feed the hungry, it meant just don't say it. It meant go out and feed the hungry. And I think what is really frustrating to me is when I hear from colleagues who constantly tout their faith, mm-hmm. you know, and when we get to this issue, we'll say, well, I give to this charity, or I give to that charity, or, you know, I give more in church, or I do this, or I volunteered at a food bank in my parish or whatever. And I'm like, it just isn't enough. You know, it just isn't enough because it's not working. Hunger is getting worse in this country right now.
To Congressman McGovern, the hunger crisis is a moral crisis.
I've always been somebody who's been, you know, kind of reluctant to talk about my faith and politics. But I will tell you that my faith has guided a lot of what I do and my priorities here. I believe that in the richest country in the history of the world, and I know you all do too, that yes. nobody should be hungry, and that it's a radical idea. Mm-hmm. This is crazy, right? We can solve this. There's a role for our faith-based community in particular. I mean, when they appear up here, I mean, they have a moral voice that, quite frankly, I don't have, right? And I think that also is that has to be more and more of a focus in terms of priorities. And I really believe, though, and I'm hopeful as we speak here today, that for all that we're dealing with right now and for all the chaos that this pandemic has brought, we have an opportunity to shape a future that will not only get us out of this pandemic, but also shape a future that can deal with major issues like hunger and food insecurity.
That was Congressman Jim McGovern, representing the 2nd District of Massachusetts, Abby Liebman, President and CEO of Maison, Nama Haviv, Community Engagement Director of Maison, Rabbi Sarah Brous of the Jewish Congregation ICAR in California, and Rabbi Joel Pitkowski of Congregation Beth Shalom in New Jersey. To learn more about the organizations working to combat hunger in America, please visit this week's show notes for links to websites, resources, and programs where you can learn more. Food is part of our identity, and so are the rituals of gathering. Coming up, we take a closer look at the real story about the first Thanksgiving. You are listening to Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices.